Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yo, what's up? What's up? What's good, everybody? This is the May 31st, 2020 episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the cohort Truth on Sports and the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us on Facebook by going to the Boxing Source and following us there. You can also follow us on Instagram, The Boxing Source. You can also get with us through Twitter at Boxing Source 2 and follow the YouTube channel, The Boxing Source. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. We are doing a simulcast currently on the live podcast here, which will be available later through iTunes and Google Podcasts and Spotify. And then you also have it available on YouTube. Here within 15 minutes, we're going to have our special guest on to talk about a few things here within the sport of boxing. And then we'll also try to get into a couple of things going on within the boxing world. As we're still looking forward to the first live cards that are coming up through Top Rank, scheduled for June 9th. We're going to see if we could kind of talk about that a little bit, and also a couple of other news and notes that have, been going through over the past week. You have something where they're, trying to solidify a couple more events later on down the line, later in June and also in July. There was plans for former world champion Carl Frampton to be in the ring by the end of July or early August. And that might be to kind of set up something later on down the line for the scheduled or planned bout that Carl Frampton was going to have with the WBO super featherweight champion, Jermell Herring. That is something there where we're going to be taking a look at that, seeing if that is going to be playing later on down the line between Jermell Herring and Carl Frampton. So I'm going to be, looking forward to that. I think Jermell Herring has something planned through Top Rank over in Las Vegas. I think that's going to be sometime in July. It hasn't really been solidified as of yet, but I'm going to, keep in touch with Jermell Herring to see when that particularly happens. The thing is, we also had news about Maravilla, the former middleweight champion of the world, Sergio Martinez. Looks like he may be having plans to return to the ring He said that he was planning to, you know, fight in the month of June, but of course that has been, you know, postponed. But the 45-year-old, you know, was saying that he's gonna, you know, probably, you know, have a couple of bouts, maybe something, you know, over in his home country, Argentina. He says that, you know, he hadn't really considered facing the likes of Canelo Alvarez there, but he said that he's not quite looking for that fight, and that he, you know, lost the connection to the sport of boxing in those, you know, tail end of the years that he was fighting, particularly when he did lose the WBC middleweight championship to Miguel Cotto. But he says that he's more focused on fighting and, you know, enjoying, you know, fighting. So we'll see how that turns out for the former middleweight champion there, Sergio Maravilla Martinez. So I do have that that's out there currently right now. Like we talked about, you know, the whole thing with Mike Tyson, that still hasn't been currently solidified as far as like what his plans are going to be. There is a former, you know, contender at middleweight, Turiano Johnson, who, you know, had the, you know, had a pretty much a surprise win in his last fight. He's kind of looking towards possibly facing former WBO super welterweight champion Jaime Munguia. You know, Jaime Munguia is, you know, currently there at 35-0 with 28 knockouts. He had that stoppage of Gary or Spike O'Sullivan in January 11th. So that might be planned later on down the line is for Jaime Munguia to face, you know, former, like, top contender or former mandatory challenger Turiano Johnson. Now, Turiano Johnson, a few years ago, was the mandatory contender for, I think it was the IBF title, but suffered an injury, so he could not face Gennady Golovkin at that particular time. So the challenger ended up being Dominic Wade for Gennady Golovkin. I think that was like April of the 2016 or something like that, where Golovkin ended up facing and defeating Dominic Wade instead of fighting Turiano Johnson. So Johnson is, you know, was still trying to build himself back up to that top contender spot. He did, I think, have his fight against Sergey Derevianchenko, and I think, you know, lost to Derevianchenko, so he had to build himself back up from that particular point in order to get himself back into contention in the middleweight division. So Turiano Johnson there, you know, says that he, you know, wants to, you know, get back into, you know, contention and things like that. He, you know, is a, you know, fighter there from the Bahamas. You know, that's where, you know, most of my family is from. So, you know, I support him and what he, you know, wants to do and trying to do. There's times where he's, you know, tried to get the best fight for him at this particular point of his career. You know, him being at 36 years old. So he has to, you know, get himself in a position to try to get the bigger fights in order to get himself in contention for a middleweight championship once again. And while you do have Jaime Munguia there, as a former WBO super welterweight champion, Munguia is kind of like trying to position himself to contend for that middleweight title at, you know, with the WBO currently held by Demetrius Andrade. A potential fight between him, Munguia, and Turiano Johnson could be made, given that both of them are under the Golden Boy Promotions banner. So that's something that we will have to look out for. Right now, we have about 5 minutes or so before our special guest comes on. So if you wanted to get in and talk about boxing, you can call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. 937-5539. Press the 1 key, get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. You also have like commentary from David Hay, who, you know, had his piece about the fight that was, you know, originally set up between Oleksandr Usyk and Derek Chisora. Oleksandr Usyk, the former undisputed cruiserweight champion, has been, you know, having this thing here where he was campaigning at heavyweight, and he did have one fight at heavyweight against Tess Witherspoon, but you know, after that, he's trying to get himself into a position to contend for a world title. And looked like he was going to go the WBO route. And with that being said, they were going to set up a fight between him and Derek Chisora. And Derek Chisora, you know, who's, you know, been in and out of the game there at the heavyweight division, you know, did have, you know, that fight against Dillian Whyte some time ago, where he ended up getting stopped. But there's, you know, other instances where he had, you know, kind of like been a contender of sorts. So, you know, him, he's still kind of relevant in the heavyweight division. So, you know, with that being said, that's why they wanted to make this particular matchup between Chisora and Oleksandr Usyk. Now, you know, Chisora, after having that loss to Dillian Whyte, had a, you know, string of wins there against Nagashi, the second round knockout of Archie Spilker, and then the fourth round TKO of David Price. So he has been, you know, able to get himself back into the, you know, streak of winning there before having this fight that was planned between him and Oleksandr Usyk. But, you know, with Usyk had, you know, built himself up, like I said, had become the undisputed cruiserweight champion, did have that one defense of that undisputed cruiserweight championship against Tony Bellew with that eighth round stoppage victory. And then, like I said, fought Chaz Witherspoon last year over in Chicago. But I think that, you know, right now we got to see, like, where he is going to be at in this particular division. And like I said, if he's contending for that WBO title, which is, you know, currently held by Anthony Joshua, he has to, you know, have some type of an impressive victory over Derek Chisora for him to potentially have that matchup with Anthony Joshua later on down the line. So that's, you know, one thing there that I'm looking into as well, is for that particular matchup, when that fight is going to, you know, basically happen. You know, David Hay says that, you know, he doesn't necessarily see that happening there until they have like a crowd in attendance for it. It's not necessarily, you know, going to be something like the what they may try to do with Dillian Whyte versus Alexander Povetkin, you know, which was scheduled, you know, to be you know, on May 2nd. But looks like, you know, they're trying to make that fight, that Whyte-Povetkin fight, be in a closed-circuit atmosphere. But for this particular fight, David Hay just doesn't see that happening where it's not going to have any crowd there. It says, like, he says, like, to stage a big pay-per-view event, you need for it to work, you need a crowd, you need a significant gate revenue to cover the undercard and all the expenses that the big show comes with. So there needs to be a way to somehow get a crowd there. And at the moment, that's not looking likely for a while. Now, and going with you know, what I was saying before in reference to Top Rank, Top Rank has that guarantee, so to speak, with through ESPN. So they're using that budget from ESPN in order to have those fights, you know, like I said, scheduled for June 9th and June 11th for the first couple of cards, and then they're going to see if they can have some more on June 16th and June 18th. So it doesn't look like they have some type of guarantee for, like, say, Sky Sports or other networks there over in the UK for these promotional companies to have cards there. All right, right now, bringing in my special guest here, as I am thankful that they're able to come on at this particular time. He is coming here from, born from Odessa, Ukraine, but now resides in Brooklyn, New York. He had an extensive career in boxing with a record of 35 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. But now he is the head of Salida Promotions. That is the star of David, Mr. Dimitri Salida. Greetings, Brother Dimitri. How are you doing?
Hi, Jim. Thanks. Great to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. No problem there, Brother Dimitri. Just, you know, getting you on here to, you know, talk about a few things. Like I said, you had a career, you know, boxing career from, you know, 2001 to 2013. And then a few years later, you, well, within that time frame, you did start up Salida Promotions. So kind of like go through a little bit about your, like, how you got into boxing first, and then from that point, you know, starting your professional career.
I started boxing at the age of 13 at Tower City Boxing Club. And at the time that I started boxing, it was one of the best gyms in the country, with the likes of Louis Collazo, Curtis Stevens, Danny Jacobs, Travis Sims, Tyler Sims, Shannon Briggs, Monty Barrett, and then Abjuda would come by a couple of times a week, and many, many more. So it was really a very packed place with lots of very talented, good fighters. With lots of, you know, lots of good talented fighters, and I had the chance and the education of being around them and fighting them and boxing with them and training with them and going to tournaments and really absorbing some of the elite boxing cultures, you know, of New York City, and some of those guys, Saddam Ali from that gym, Shushu, who just made the Olympic team, was one of the last kids in that gym, since the gym, you know, the gym has closed a couple of years ago, but really an incredible program. Jimmy O'Fallon, the head of Tower City Boxing Club, someone that has a tremendous impact on my life, you know, was there to help kids become better citizens, really heal the community. And the chosen few, and probably less than 1%, were good boxers, and they then went on to become something. But it was truly a real great after-school program. I remember in the early 90s, there was a guy by the name of Mr. Tate, who was Jimmy's partner. And the police used to bring, like, the worst kids from the neighborhood to the gym. And Mr. Tate used to make them box with one another. So it was great education on many levels. So I won many national tournaments, or many state tournaments. We just won several national tournaments. And then I turned pro in 2001 after winning the Bowman Club. Again, we should have won the world for the upcoming five-year tournament. And I signed with Tampering. I was with them for 3 years, and I was with the Bella for 3 years. Then I fought for Squaw Rings and for Golden Boy. So really, as a fighter, you know, had a lot of exposure to some of the best companies in the sport of boxing, and learned and watched. And after my fight with Amir Khan, I started to promote my own events. In the beginning, really just for the business, for the purpose of progressing my career. But, you know, there are a lot of great fighters. Started to shock me. One of the first guys I started to work with was Jarrell Miller. You know, he fought for me in second professional fight. And step by step, you know, I got to raise my talent. And not too many years later, in terms of my promotional, you can see where we are. And I love what I do every day. And I feel blessed to be in it.
Okay. I was seeing here, I think you may be like a little bit away from the phone a little bit, but yeah, you would talk about with your beginnings and things like that. Like you, kind of like started off, you were, you know, motivated by, I guess, the likes of Mike Tyson, and you said like you were you know, training there, you know, over in New York and, you know, training and finding with the likes of Zab Judah, among others. So that kind of like, you know, prepares you to be, you know, a very, you know, great fighter. And I think like you were there at in the amateur, while you were an amateur, you had like a record of around like 60 wins or so as an amateur. And, you know, won the Golden Gloves in 2001 over in New York at 139 pounds there, so to speak. So, yeah, like you were saying, you had like a lot of that talent around you when you were starting off your boxing career, pretty much starting at, you know, amateurs and then moving up to professional ranks.
Yeah, you know, Andrew Rozier, Felipe Gomez, Norma Lorick, you know, a lot of the folks that are that have been, you know, have been on top of the New York City boxing scene, and Andre is one of the best trainers in the game. You know, all those guys started out with us. Andre used to train the amateur team, you know, so it's really, really incredible foundation for us all in those years. And it was in the basement, no air conditioner, no heater. So in the summertime, it was extremely hot, extremely hot. And in the winter,
oh,
it was really cold. But you know, it made men out of boys, you know, and really tested your will and your character on every level, you know, especially in that ring, which was always very hot, always very hot.
Yeah, now being in New York, you know, New York, Brooklyn area during the summertime and not having any air conditioning, my goodness, like. You're definitely right. You will get tested in those type of conditions, especially in the summer, where it gets to, you know, 100 degrees or more, you know, in the summer months. So if you're able to get through that, you can, you know, pretty much get through, you know, anything there. But, you know, yeah, going through that, like I was saying, through your amateur career, you know, being in that thing where you participated in the New York Golden Gloves, that's like, you know, one of the, you know, high-profile competitions in the U.S. So, you know, you being able to win that Golden Gloves championship in 2001, you know, that kind of like set the stage for you to turn pro at 19 years old.
Yeah, for sure. And being able to then, you know, sign with Top Rank and being, you know, and fighting on some of the biggest fight cards in the you know, in the country and in the world, and being exposed fighting on a Vladimir Klitschko on the card in my second professional fight, Floyd Mayweather, when he fought Castillo, Eric Morales, Poirier Ayala, Bones Adams, you know, the list goes on. Marco Antonio Barrera versus Eric Morales, after the whole with Fernando Vargas, and just being exposed to that kind of level of atmosphere and level of fight and company who conducted that business and being, you know, being working with them, it was really tremendous education for me. And you know, now being involved in a promotion business, really seeing the sport, you know, in a real 360 view is truly incredible for me, because I love boxing and I love every facet of the sport. So it's great, you know.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And you know, with you being there as a professional, you were, you know, competing there originally at, you know, 135 pretty much, or 140, you know, and competing at that level for the super lightweight division. And you had, you know, those string of wins there, you know, building things up and over in the likes of New York, Atlantic City, and Las Vegas. Like, you had like a good string of fights over at the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas early in your career. So it's like, you know, you just starting out your professional career, and at that time you're at one of the biggest and most famous venues for boxing there. And you had, you know, those string of fights there to, you know, be there at Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. So like, how was that experience like, being at the Mandalay Bay there for your first, and it's been what, like seven to about six, so your first 10 fights were at the Mandalay Bay?
It was pretty incredible. You know, I remember, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
I remember, you know, being, because I turned pro when I was 19 years old, being too young to walk through the casino floor. So when I would have to go to the fight arena, to the weigh-in, I would get, there would be a chaperone walking me through the casino floor, to the fighter or to the weigh-in, which is pretty interesting because I was fighting for the crowd, but I couldn't walk to the casino floor. So, fortunately, I never really had a knack for gambling, so it wasn't very tempting for me. But definitely, you know, and also spending a lot of training camps with Floyd Mayweather early in my career, seeing Leila Ali train out in Vegas and some of the great, great fighters. It was really great experience for me. And, when I feel like when I watch a fight and when I watch even a person spar and train, you know, because of my education, because I've been really exposed to boxing, since I'm 13 years old on a very high level, gives me, in a promotional business, gives me an upside, gives me really, really, you know, great ability to evaluate talent and to, and to evaluate fights and see which way the fight goes. And that's companies in the sport in terms of building of fighters and being able to evaluate talent is top rank.
Yeah.
Great matchmaking. So I got to see it and to benefit from that machine, you know, and really was an important building block in my education as a promoter.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, they're being in top rank, that, you know, puts you in a, you know, high level, you know, pretty much like a whole high profile type of event there. You built your, you know, record up to, you know, being undefeated. They did, like, win a international super lightweight title against Derek Campos. And that, you know, put you in position to fight Amir Khan for, at the time, the WBA super lightweight title there. But
yeah, that fight with Campos was on the Roy Jones Joe Kazagi pay per view in my Square Garden in New York. That was when I was a Square Ring.
Square Ring Promotions, yeah. Yeah, that one. Roy was under. So yeah, like you were saying, you were fighting there under, like, the, you know, highest profile promotional companies at that particular time there. So you know, you had that, and then had a little slip there with Khan, and then, you know, built up a record after that, you know, with a string of 5 wins. Then had the little issue with what was it, Gabriel Bracero?
Mhm. Yes. Yeah. At that stage of my career, I was already couldn't dedicate myself to training 100%.
Mhm.
In some ways going through the motions, and I just couldn't really, I was not as busy as I needed to be, you know, to go into a fight like
mm-hmm.
that. And I realized at that point that it's time for me to look for other things within the sport of boxing. And
right.
that's how we started. The business came forth and about.
Right. And like I was saying there before, you were, you know, establishing your promotional company at that particular time. And then, you know, from that point, 2 years after you started it, that's when you, you know, kind of like focus on that a little bit more. But, you know, before I, you know, go into Salida Promotions a little bit more, I wanted to, you know, get into more of your background here. You know, when you got to Brooklyn, New York, you started to, you know, look at Orthodox Judaism and, you know, started to practice Judaism there. How has that been, you know, going from that particular point to now? Because I know that they had, they did like a little bit, a movie in 2007 where you kind of like split, you know, practicing Judaism and being in the ring. But like going to your, you know, your studies as a Orthodox Jew.
Yeah. So you know, great question. You know, I came here from the Soviet Union, you know, growing up in the Soviet Union, Jews was treated as second citizens. You know, didn't really have all the rights of everybody else, and we didn't have the right to practice our religion. So, the reason why my family and really every Jewish family from the Soviet Union immigrated to the United States and to different parts of the world is for the reason, you know, because they were not allowed to be openly Jewish, whether they want to be religious or even if they didn't want to be religious, or just, you know, to be openly Jewish. And I wanted to learn about what it meant to be, you know, to be Jewish. And I got in touch with an organization called Chabad Lubavitch when I was 14 years old. And growing up in Sarah City Boxing Club, you know, Jimmy O'Farrell, who was an older African-American gentleman, you know, was really took me under his wing and became like a, you know, like a second, you know, like a real father figure in my life and really taught me a lot about life. And he used to tell me, he used to take me to different gyms where he was when he was a kid. And because of segregation, he couldn't function the same way that other, you know, that the other boxers functioned. And he had to go from the back. And he used to tell me about it. He used to tell me different places and show me when he used to fight what different things that happened. So, you know, I was kind of very different in the Sarah City Boxing Club. Or, you know, I kind of stood out because of where I come from. Jimmy always encouraged in me to be outspoken about, you know, myself and about where I come from and all the different, you know, all that. So as I learned about myself and learned about my faith, having the influence of Jimmy and being a responsible leader and speaking about things that are important, gave me a certain vision of the world and made me, you know, when I was younger, you know, early in my career, you know, some things was very important to me, like not fighting on the Sabbath and wearing a yarmulke, wearing a, you know, publicly, you know, and being able to deal with all of that. So I credit Jimmy with strengthening me in terms of, and giving me the inspiration to be able to carry it out in a responsible, good way. So,
that's
what's up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that, you know, that had been a very key part of your life once you, you know, moved from the Soviet Union over to Brooklyn, New York, and that has, you know, been, you know, part of your life, and you've been able to practice that from, you know, that point up until now, and I know that, you know, that being very important to you, that kind of like just says like how you kind of view things as far as like, you know, what's going on around you and things like that. But wanted to see if I could get in a caller here that has been listening for a little bit from the 813 area code. You're on with Dimitri Salida here on the Boxing Source Radio Show. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Jay? What's up, Dima? Hey, this is my name is Terrell. I'm from Tampa. Avid follow-up of this show, and just once again, boxing has long time been my favorite sport. You're definitely a name that we know that's been out there within the stratosphere from when your time as a boxer until the time where you transition into a promoter. We definitely have talked about it on the show from time to time, but once again, welcome to the show. Previous,
thank you.
I don't know if you follow that, but we're glad to have you and get some real-time industry news from a real time promoter with a good stable of fighters under you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be on, and the floor is yours. Let me know what questions you got.
Yeah. Hey, Joel, you got something for him before I go into a little bit with Salida Promotions?
No, just go ahead and because you know, like we talked about his promotional firm. Quite often, as he has fighters come up with fights, things like that. But for right now, no question. Right now, I would definitely have something going forward. But going forward, just want to hear about all the fighters that are currently under your stable, people that you're looking at. Definitely want to talk about Big Baby Miller. I'm sure you're getting more into detail about that. in regards to his whole experience from last year until where he's at right now. Like rebuilding his image, get him a good fight. So we, like, so we talk about you guys all the time, you know.
You can go into that, Brother Demetri.
Yeah, so we did a deal with Jarrell with Top Rank. So they're our co-promoter. And that'll be a great benefit to him vis-a-vis the ESPN platform. And I believe Jarrell has all the skills to be the heavyweight champion of the world, and has the personality to really, you know, to really transcend boxing. So and capture, you know, the boxing fan. So he has the chance to do it, and hopefully he will. And I believe he's gonna come back into the ring, you know, as boxing is resuming. Hopefully sometime in the midsummer. Carissa Shields was supposed to fight May 9th,
right,
in Flint against Marie DeCarry for the undisputed junior middleweight world title, but that got delayed because of Corona. We'd like to reschedule that. We have Shochukan Ergashev, Otto Whalen, working on something for him, and Jericho Quinn, Vladimir Shishkin, Aslanbek Itigov, Aram Avagian. You know, and the list goes on. So we're very happy with our roster, and it's growing, and we are working on some new signings and working on some new projects to be able to get the exposure for the boxing, you know, for our boxers that the boxers need. We have also, during this Corona time, expanded our YouTube channel to a great extent, and I did deals with Warriors Boxing, Warriors. We did a deal for Cedric Christian's library for America Presents. So boxing fans can check out Salida Promotions. Our YouTube channel has some great fights, great fighters, and working on things to constantly grow and function.
Yeah, you were talking about the thing there with, Salida Promotions, the YouTube page. So y'all definitely follow the Salida Promotions YouTube channel there, and then soon to come, they're going to have the relaunch of the Salida Promotions website. Now, I wanted to see if I could add in another caller in here from the 646 area code. He is what we call the president of the Deontay Wilder Fan Club and also the president of the Clarissa Shields Fan Club, Mr. Matthew Brown. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, JR? How are you doing today, man? I just wanted to call in and see what's going on the show today.
Hey,
I'm all good, man.
Dimitri?
Hey, who's that?
Brother Dimitri Salida.
What's going on, Matthew?
The promoter,
yep.
Oh, wow. You got a big guest on today, JR.
Awesome, baby.
Yeah. Wait. Clarissa Shields promoted Demetri Salida.
Yeah.
Wow.
Tell him, baby. Tell him.
Hey, Matt, don't get too starstruck now. Come on now. Hold on.
Did he bring Clarissa with him?
I don't know
Clarissa
about all that.
She a phone call away, man. Clarissa. Doing our thing, man.
No,
we'll arrange that for a later time, because I know that if I had her on this particular podcast, either Matt would kind of faint midway through the podcast, or somebody else would probably snitch on me for something that happened. So
we'll
work
queen,
on that a little bit later.
The queen of boxing, okay. The most decorated fighter in women's boxing history, double gold medalist, multiple times world champion in different weight classes, undisputed in different weight classes. Nobody touches the GOAT, man.
That's right. And I'm glad we do that on the same page, man.
What other fighters are... Who you manage now? Well, you promote now. Are you still have a deal with Jarrell Big Baby Miller?
Jarrell Big Baby Miller, we co-promote him with Top Rank. Otto Whalen, the guy that gave Tyson Fury the other side of his life.
Yeah, he should have won that fight. Come on, man.
He should have won that fight. That's
gotta,
right.
You got to call it what it is. Any other, right. If that was Whalen with that cut, they would have stopped the fight.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Jermaine Franklin, undefeated American heavyweight. I feel the best American heavyweight.
Oh, yeah, I've seen him on Showbox plenty of times.
Shoji Connor Gasha. And the list goes on. You know, we really have a great stable of fighters, which I'm very proud of.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll become a TV near you in the near future.
Yeah, I had Jacob Bonus on the podcast last week here. So him and his brother Joseph Bonus over there in the Detroit area too, you know, talking about you. So, yeah, you have a good, you know, little stable of fighters there that you're building, that's really the promotion.
Thank you. Working hard.
How were you able to, repair that relationship with Jerrell Miller? Because he was kind of talking spicy after the whole doping test about everybody that was in his camp, you know? So how were you able to repair that relationship to the point where you're still in business together?
Well, I mean, I'm his promoter. I was not in his camp. I didn't know about what was going on as far as that goes. I've been working with Jerrell since the second professional fight. And through hard work and through planning, we got a chance to fight Anthony Joshua for the Unified Heavyweight World Championship at the Garden for big, big money. And unfortunately, you know, for reasons beyond our control, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Jerrell, you know, we've had our ups and downs in our relationship, and I'm glad that we were able to function in a way where we can do the best thing for his career. And the best thing for his career, I feel at this point, is to be teamed up with Top Rank and ESPN and to do this type of deal. So I'm happy that it all worked out.
Do you have any idea when he's actually going to be back in the ring? And you think he'll be licensed with no issue?
Yes, we believe that he's going to be back in the ring sometime. Mid to late summer. Hopefully, obviously, you know, boxing continues to return, and we all can get healthier, and you know, and things move in that direction. But that's the plan.
And is he enrolled in beta or anything like that at all?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, because I think that he had already. He basically already served that suspension and whatnot, so that, you know, isn't much of a problem
at
all.
More than that. Yeah. He paid his dues. And
Matt, you had something?
Yeah, what do you have planned for Jermaine Franklin? Because it seemed like he was moving up the ranks a bit, but then he ran into a little trouble in his his fight against Jerry Forrest. He ran into a little trouble there. A lot of people thought maybe he got lucky on his decision. Like, where does he stand, and what do you see from him in the upcoming year?
He's still very young, so you know, he's still developing and getting better. He had a fight against Jerry Forrest. He fought on Showtime, and hopefully, once boxing gets back, we want to stay busy. We want to bring him back. That's really the plan. But I feel that Jermaine is a very talented fighter. You know, at that stage of your career, those type of fights make you better. They make you, hopefully, if you take the right lesson, they improve you, you know, and you gain the invaluable experience of going through a tough war, especially in heavyweight boxing. So hopefully Jermaine will be able to. I would actually love to have him on your podcast. I would love to have Jermaine on your podcast at some time.
Do you ever give, like,
I'm sorry, you broke off. Hello?
I'll try to give them little pointers and tricks of the trade.
One more time, you have to repeat yourself because you broke off.
Oh, what I was saying was, like, because being a former fighter yourself, do you ever try to give guys in your current stable any tricks of the trade, like pointers in the actual ring?
I do, you know, very carefully, because sometimes trainers and boxers a certain type of way. So I have to do it in a very careful way, and because what I want to say has to be digested, you know. sometimes you say stuff and people don't listen to you, so it's a waste of breath for me and a waste for them. So I'm very careful to offer my advice when I feel that it's going to be, you know, needed, and really taken in, you know, by the folks that I'm giving the advice to. But you know, I certainly have my opinions and my understanding and experience from training with different fighters and different trainers and in different environments. So, but I believe it gives me an opportunity to look at problems and or when things are going well to be able to evaluate and assess, you know, and make sure the good stuff sticks.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be that, you know, that number one hype man. So, I mean, I know you want to get involved as far as, like, the tips and, you know, tricks and stuff like that, but you also, you know, like you said, got to put that promoter hat on and boost your fighters up. So, you know, I always feel that it's kind of tough for you to,
you know,
kind of be in that instance.
I love being in the locker room, being the hype man. I wish I had a hype man when I was fighting.
that would be something there, you know, having somebody there with you, you know, as far as like boosting your fights or whatever it is, or, you know, having some type of thing where you would have a flashy little intro there while you had your professional career going. That would have been something.
Oh, yeah, in San Jose City Boxing Club, we had a couple of hype men, so I love those, you know. When the going gets tough and you're boxing, somebody hits you with a big shot. The hype man get you out of trouble, man. Get you out of the water, man. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, random question out here. You know, being that you, you know, like come from the Ukraine and from there to Brooklyn, and like you said, you're practicing Orthodox U. You've had like trips that you've gone out to. You know, like over in Jerusalem and that type of thing. Like, how was that particular experience back then? Or if you had, like, something similar to that that you kind of, you know, keep in your memory?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand it. Can you repeat that again?
Like, you know, being that you're from the Ukraine and you went from the Ukraine to Brooklyn, New York, but you know, you've also traveled in various parts of the world. Like, what place that you visited to kind of, like, sticks in your mind?
Israel. Hello?
Yeah.
Guys? Yeah, you know, going to Israel was very special for me.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I would probably, you know, kind of like put into my book as far as like one place I would like to go sometime is
incredible, historic. Guys, I have to go, so let's do one more question.
All right, I'll go with Matt. You got something for him?
Yeah, when you bring up Commercial Shields on the show, man.
Oh, aren't you the head of the fan club?
I am, man. I write articles on her, I follow her, I promote her videos, promote her fight. We just need her to
create our
presence on the show.
So text me or email me privately and we'll set it up.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get that going, man. We'll get that going. But I think that I'll get my man, Matt, to do something. I'll have something arranged for Clarissa Shields to get at him at one particular point. There. Thank you very much, Demetrius Salina, for
thank you guys.
Being on the show, man. And we'll get in contact with you later.
Thank you, guys. I hope you guys will have me back.
All right. No problem.
Oh,
no doubt.
That's right, Daniel. Okay. All the best. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
So that's Demetrius Salina, man, from Salina Promotions. I'm very thankful to have him on. And, yes, I will definitely get in contact with him. So we can bring the GOAT onto the podcast very soon.
Because
I don't know, but if we have a live on the show, it might get too hot in the room for Mr. Matthew Brown.
I might need a cigarette after, man.
Yeah, hey, I don't know, man. You might have to have a cold shower or something. I mean, but that was a good little few minutes there with Demetrius Salida, head of Salida Promotions and former boxers that was, you know, there at the super lightweight and welterweight divisions. He told us a good little few things about what he's doing right now and, what he did during his professional career and his background. So I thank him very much for that. I will definitely get with him at a later time to, you know, the point where, you know, most of the stuff as far as like live boxing action is back. And when these fights, you know, get set up under his promotional banner, then we're definitely going to contact him to talk about those there. Here. So, just like, you know, had like, I would say we could rap a little bit about boxing. I know that we got some stuff happening in June 9th, of course, and June 11th. But since we got Brother Matt on here, I got a plan on doing something to like have a little bit of a segment, and I need some theme music so that when you're on, we can have like a little bit of a segment for you. On this show, man. So we got to get that going because we don't have that update anymore. So we can't have that theme where we get any updates. So
no dots to count, man. No fans are allowed. It's like every fight is a top ranked fight. Jesus Christ,
yeah, man. It's crazy, man. And then you have folks talking about what happened yesterday, man, on UFC. Ooh. And I'm like, oh, man, that was it.
What's going on with John Jones is very interesting, though, man.
Man, I don't know, man. Like is he gonna fight or not? Like, god damn.
Well, he already vacated his title, so he's asking for his release.
Yeah, man. I don't know, man. He probably gonna look for something else, or maybe going to another little sport or something.
Going to boxing. He said that he could make more money in his first boxing match than he could make in his next three UFC fights.
That's true. That's true.
I tell you what, real quick. On that note of UFC, what are like the purses that the top guys typically get in compared to boxers? You might know.
The most I see is probably Conor. But Conor started getting the big purses because of boxing. So if you think about guys like John Jones, he's made $5 to maybe $7 million tops. And that's even after all these bonuses and stuff like that. The crazy thing about UFC fighters is that they don't get any piece of the gate revenue. They don't get any piece of sponsorship. All they get is their purse. And they get a cut of, well, they used to get a cut of pay-per-view. After the ESPN deal, they don't get a cut of that either. So these guys are getting screwed.
Whoa, hold on. Yeah, I'm looking at something here for John Jones. Man, hold on, man. Nah, this can't be right, man. Like, what is it, 500K or something? Like, against Ray?
Yo, listen, man. Yeah.
Man.
He said like, that the most he's gotten is like $6 million, something like that. Now, imagine you have someone who is considered the greatest fighter in the history of boxing, right? The greatest fighter in the history of boxing. Knocking people out. Generating $40 to $50 million consistently in pay-per-view revenue, and then he only making $6 million top, but usually it's lower than that.
That's sad. That's sad, 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 sad. And like I said, John Jones is he pretty much has been the brand of UFC for the last 10 years, ever since the GSP days and things like that. You've been at the forefront. And that's despite the controversy that he's been out of the ring. He still is the brand and the standard of UFC. I mean, of course, we got Conor McGregor and some supporting characters. But the main thing has been your boy right there the entire time. And like I said, that's flat out robbery when you look at that closely.
Hey, and look, and boxing writers, oh, please bring Dana White to boxing to save boxing. What? And haven't we seen fighters get screwed enough over the years in boxing? We want to bring Dana White to bring a UFC-type system to boxing. Like, and the funny thing is, everyone says, well, in the UFC, the best fight the best. That's not true. When have you ever seen Dana White work with another promoter? Have you seen UFC versus a Bellator guy or UFC versus a Pride guy or K-1 or anything like that? No.
K-1?
Basically, you get the most known person in UFC versus another most known person in UFC. That doesn't mean it's the best fight in the best. Like, come on, man. If you only have PBC versus PBC, is everyone going to say the best fight in the best? No, because that's only one promoter. UFC is the equivalent of a Top Rank or a PBC or a Matchroom or a Golden Boy. It's one damn promoter. And he has brainwashed the skinhead white guys.
The skinhead white guys is just that guy. Have only those fans that just look like. I ain't even going to it.
Yeah, it's crazy to me, man. Y'all, wow. Whatever. It's the media. I can't blame the fans. I blame the media.
Yeah, man. It's just a bad little situation there where you have all of these fighters that have, you know, done those things there at UFC. And you talk about this thing here with John Jones. I mean, UFC has been out there for, what, over 20, 25 years. I mean, think about those guys that we knew about back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and how much they were paid. Like,
exactly.
Like you said, you had folks talking about him going to boxing.
Nah, that ain't gonna happen.
But yo, I was like going back into you know, a little bit of news and notes, man. I said, you know, before Demetri Salida got back on that you had stuff about news about Carl Frampton, who will eventually lose to Jermell Herring. But
oh,
he
don't
says
say
that he's gonna
don't
have
say that. You never know. Don't
I'll put
that.
It out there, I don't care. I'm biased.
Well, Jermell Herring hasn't been on in a while, man, so he's kind of losing his status.
Hey, Terrell, man. Hey, Terrell, I need you to see if you can get to your fellow Marine back on, man.
What's up with him? I mean, it's like I haven't seen him pop up here and there and things like that. We know that when boxing does come back, he's probably going to likely have to travel overseas in order to get that fight. But it's kind of funny now when you think about this now, with so many people having the prospect of fighting without fans, why would he have to travel over there when that money's really not going to be there from a live gate, things like that? You know, so it's kind of funny.
Yep.
Things, so many uncertain things right now because there's not going to be a live gate to figure into a person, things like that.
Well, it's looking like one person is going to be traveling from, you know, around there, Ukraine, over to, you know, Las Vegas or California in Victor Postol, because they say that they're trying to make that actual fight, you know, between him and Jose Ramirez. So if Postol is able to travel, you know, from where he's at, actually, you know what? If he's able to travel the way he's at to fight, speaking of Jose Ramirez, and goddamn it, Dustin Lomachenko can travel over here to fight and kill Primo Lopez.
Hey, listen, you know, the U.S. passed that emergency executive order that are now allowing international sports figures to fly into the U.S.
Yes.
for sporting events.
Yep.
So there's no excuse now. There's no excuse now.
Nah,
and
hey,
Mr. Jose Ramirez said that he's waiting for Teofimo and Devin Haney to come into 140 so he can basically whoop their ass. That's a side note.
Yeah.
Oh, you say he wants that smoke. He just climbed. Ain't got no more excuses now.
No excuses. And you already know, with all the current events that's going on in society right now, after the murder, and I emphasize murder, of George Floyd, you already know that they are going to open up entertainment and entertainment venues very quickly, because they want to distract the people. So there's going to be no excuse for any fighter to duck any fighter. They're going to open it up very – California already this weekend – I don't know if it got reported. California already said combat sports could continue. California already opened up this weekend. So you're going to see state after state open up, because they want the country distracted by their minstrel show known as sports and entertainment. So it is what it is, man. And you know what? I ain't going to lie. I'll be watching. I'll be watching.
I'll be watching, but that's the only thing that I'll be doing.
That is true. But hey, listen, if we got a protest on the same night of Teofimo versus Lomachenko, my black ass gonna be home watching that fight. I ain't gonna front, man. I ain't gonna front, y'all. I'm gonna be home watching that goddamn fight. I'll be tweeting.
Yeah, be mad tweeting, buddy. Yo, you have no fucking fault, buddy. Oh, man. Oh, crazy, man. Yo, yeah, that's going to be something there, man. Hey, Matt, how about, who is it, your boy, Mary Villa, man? He says that he might get back into the ring.
Is his knee going to hold up?
Like, I don't know.
His knee exploded in the ring, and he got his ass whipped by Miguel Cotto.
He couldn't move for shit.
But they're talking about him fighting Maidana in an all-Argentina matchup.
Hey, you know what, though? If they find a way to have that fight on some type of freaking ESPN Plus or something like that, I don't care. I'll pay $4.99 or $5.99.
I ain't gonna lie, I'll watch it too.
But there's gonna be a problem. I don't think McDonald's gonna make weight.
Well, that's what I said. What weight?
What's gonna be 168? 175?
I don't know.
Probably 175.
What's about it might happen, man? Oh, goodness. So, man, hold on. So, I look at a few other things here. Let me see. You got the thing there. We were talking about the thing for Top Rank. You had the thing June 9th where they're going to feature Shakur Stevenson. And then they had the other thing for June 11th, I think that was for Wasn't freaking Magdaleno that they were going to feature in that one? Yeah, Magdaleno. I don't give a fuck about that. Oh, come on. Who gives a shit about Jesse Magdaleno?
Or is that Diego? Which one? Is it the one that Teofimo knocked out, or the one that wanted to fight Teofimo after he got his brother got knocked out?
I think Jesse's the one that wanted to fight, you know, after Diego got knocked out, because Jesse is the one that's within the top two in the WBO rankings.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
But isn't your girl, Michaela Mayer, fighting on that Shakur Stevenson card?
Yeah, I think so.
What's going on with her situation with WBC?
Yeah, WBC, because they had this. Yeah, Terrell, you were talking about that at one point, right?
What's that?
Where Meyer could have fought for the WBC belt, but they had that other fight happen instead.
Oh, you're talking about the female boxer?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because kind of what we talked about last week with Eddie Hearn just coming into with the zone and just throwing money around. In that regard, she was in line for a title fight. She had been the number one contender for well over a year. Eddie Hearn came in and showed favor to his local fighter, and got her a title shot. Now she won that bout, good for her. She wanted the belt and everything, but it's kind of funny when you are number one contender, and everyone knows that. It's documented in the rankings, things like that. And someone comes and leapfrogs you and takes your opportunity away. All because of money and stature, things like that, within the industry of boxing. But as we already know, boxing is a business, but it's still not cool, though. That's still not cool to see that happen. And now it's kind of funny how we now, like we talked about last week, now he's making so that the attraction and the market is about to balance itself again now with fair market value for a lot of fighters now. So these persons that we saw for the what's the guy's name, Vargas, people like that, all those persons are going to be coming down, and especially now with boxing with no fans and no live gate. So boxers are going to be humming, and really it's kind of a good thing now. If you truly want to fight now, you're going to be stuck with short money just so you can get back out there and get your name back out there.
Wait. Why should boxers be accepting short money?
Well, I'm speaking of not. We won't be seeing these inflated purses that we saw these past 2-3 years. That's what I'm speaking of. So once again, that's what I'm speaking of. Like I said, that live gate money is not going to be there in order to factor in to be considered for your fighters and promoters, things like that, when they make their deals.
Well, what do you guys think is the best fight that has been announced so far in the United States?
Yeah, man, I'm like looking at a couple of these things, man, and I don't see, you know, much of
they got Herring versus Jonathan Okendo. They got Alex Saucedo versus Sonny Fredrickson. Maloney versus Josh Franco.
Yeah,
Mike
Klania.
Yeah. Like, damn, the fight, man. I'm looking most forward to.
Dabaretti said, man, I don't care if there's any fans. He's still going to fight. God damn.
Yeah, well, Dabaretti, he's turning into Jermaine Ramirez, though. Like, this dude is fighting bum.com. Like, he would fight. He don't care what you do for a living. He will get your ass in the ring. I saw that the guy he's fighting is like 15 and 13.
Yep.
I was like, what the hell? Like,
yeah, 13-1 with 6 KOs.
That's world class right there. That's world class.
Hey, but it's New Mexico, they approved that fight.
What about my man Ivan Baranchik against Jose Cepeda? Now, that's a fight I'm looking forward to.
That's
going to be a war.
I like that one. Definitely,
I might have to bet against your boy Shakur though for this June 9th fight.
Against Caraballo?
Yeah, I'm gonna put $100 on Caraballo. Cause he's like plus 1400, man.
Like, oh yeah.
Just in case something happens.
Yeah, I feel you.
Just in case. I'm like, Jesus Christ, these odds are crazy.
Yeah, man.
It's like boxing odds makers. You can't sneak nothing past them no more. Like, the only time you really snuck a big upset past them was, I'd say, Joshua versus Ruiz, the first fight.
Ruiz.
Like,
yeah.
You were able to sneak that past them. But other than that, these boxing odds be right on.
It's like ridiculous, man, with some of them things, man. But yeah, you got Stevenson versus Caraballo, Meyer versus Joseph, and then what is the thing? It says MGM Grand's Ballroom Conference Center. Man, I've never, I don't even know where the hell that would be at. I could picture MGM Grand, and I never, like, see anything that says the Ballroom Conference Center. Like, nowhere. And nowhere.
What do you think about that? This fight with no fans and just officials and stuff, that's going to be more fans than Shakur Stevenson had for this last fight against against Gonzalez.
Yeah, Gonzalez, yeah.
Yeah, cause nobody came to that fight.
Man, wasn't that even at
That was in Vegas.
I thought that was
in
Newark, wasn't it?
No, that was in Vegas.
Oh yeah, Vegas. Yeah.
I think
right.
That was one of the at the Sparks Center in Reno.
Yeah, Reno. Yeah. Yeah, because they had that whole little thing going on as far as like him and it and Gonzalez's sister. Yeah, that was in Reno. Why would you put that thing in Reno? Like, what?
Because Bob Arum, the world has passed him by. Bob Arum can't draw fans anymore. The only thing he knows how to still do is screw people out of money. That's about it.
Yeah.
Like, he could do that till he dies. He could suck a Eddie Hearn out of $4 million for Hooker versus Ramirez. But when it comes to actually attracting fans, he just ain't got it no more.
Nah, he can't. He can't draw flies to sugar or something, or draw flies to you know what.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it looks like at least we have this schedule. So it's like they won't have anything. What is that? Sundays, right? Yeah. So it's just Tuesdays and Thursdays right now with these cards that Top Rank has. And you know, like you were saying, you have a couple of other things going on, but nothing as far as like picking up a little bit more until the end of June and then the start of July. So, but we hurting more, man. We hurting.
Well, do you think fights that Top Rank plan on doing next month is going to draw good ratings?
Man, I don't know. Because I'm not really a real TV watcher. So I haven't really been watching ESPN all that stuff. So
you're a cord cutter? You're a cord cutter?
Cord cutter.
You damn millennials, man. You're a cord cutter. Oh, my God. I am a cable guy.
Cable guy. Well, do you see like much promotion of any of these things happening on ESPN though? On any of their family networks?
It's something. Yep. It's some type of live. Well, people claim that everyone's starving for live content right now. To me, if these fights are going to draw ratings, it depends on the boxing media. They have to promote these fights in positive manners, not their usual, this is a huge mismatch, blah, 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 blah. They need to promote this shit how they promote UFC.
Yeah. Like, you can't have this thing where, I'm so tired. I can't go to the event. What am I going to do?
Exactly.
Talk about anything. Like, nah, that ain't going to
work. Radio Raheem. Right?
Goddamn Radio Raheem, man.
Yeah. Deontay Wilder was right about his ass. Yeah. Yeah. Think of these people.
Yeah.
Man, I saw him talking with the ugly broad, Phelps. Who's the one that looked like King Koopa from Super Mario? The Indian dude from the UK?
Koopa.
He looked like King Koopa, man. All these yahoos, man. All they do is complain.
Gripe and complain,
guys,
man. That's sad. You know? But like you said, I mean, as long as you're able to put stuff up for these events, and that's what we got to do in order for them to get the ratings that they need. So we need to talk about these events more, these fights more, and like I said, next week I'm gonna go into a little bit more about the fights on June 9th and June 11th, so that people will get into that little talk about that, but. I'll also have like another guest that's scheduled for next week. It's going to be someone that's in the boxing business.
Adrian Clark from the Texas area. So I mean, he's, you know, dealt with the likes of Jay Prince and other, you know, men, motors and stuff like that. So that's going to be, and he has a book out called Protect Yourself at All Times. It kind of like goes into the business of boxing. So that's going to be a pretty interesting little interview there with Brother Adrian Clark next week. So I'll be looking forward to that.
A quick question for the both of y'all, right? So right now, right, we know we're real close to coming back into the live boxing action. And like it's already been covered. Pretty much going to be an event with no fans. So at this point now, we're in June. We're in second, third quarter of the year. So who's going to be the first pay-per-view fight for boxing? And with that said, can they afford to just give us a sorry-ass card? So with that saying, are we going to see like two top-tier fights on one pay-per-view card for boxing? Who might that be, and when might that happen? And can we have a pay-per-view event with no fans? Can boxing support that?
All right, Matt. Okay. I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay. We have the planned third fight between Fury and Wilder, October 3rd. Okay.
No, that's going to be November, December. That's not going to happen.
Or November or December. Okay. Yeah. So I think that will be the first kind of like pay-per-view style event that's going to happen. Okay.
What fight do you think?
Yeah. You got
Tank versus Leo and Spence versus Danny.
Spence versus Danny might be before that, actually. I think Spence versus Danny will be before that. Tank versus Leo, I think, won't happen until the tail end of the year.
Really?
So I think that'll happen after Fury and Wilder.
Wow.
That wouldn't be good for Tank. Wouldn't be good for Tank, but for that particular fight, I think that number one, it needs to have fans there in attendance, and number two, I think that it has to be in California.
Yeah,
I think it needs those two elements. So with that being said, I just don't see it being any time before, early to mid-December. You know, they were able to get a good amount of fans there for, him versus Gamboa December 28th last year. But that was like a sports weekend, too, especially in Atlanta, because you had the college football playoff, LSU Oklahoma, there before.
Yeah.
The fight happened. So, but I'll take away the thing for Spence Garcia, because I don't think they're going to really try to stack that, because it's going to be the first pay-per-view. So for Wilder Fury 3, what would you think would be an enticing co-feature bout to have on that to make that pay-per-view be even more than what it is?
I would say Luis Ortiz versus Andy Ruiz.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I'm with that. I'm with that one. Because we were fine. Well, I mean, we got your boy Andy Ruiz Jr. there with Eddie and Chapo.
Yeah.
So you have that, and then you have Luis Ortiz. We'll see where Luis Ortiz is at this particular point of his career. You know?
Well,
I would have said, Luis Ortiz versus Mike Tyson?
Yeah. Who has the age advantage?
Yeah. I don't know. Andy Ruiz versus Luis Ortiz would be something, but Andy Ruiz versus Charles Martin would be something too.
Ooh. That's a sexy fight right there, man. Yeah. I would like that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe like, what they'll try to do is get Konaki back into the championship picture. Maybe a rematch with him and Charles Martin.
Hellenius, yeah.
No. I don't want him to fight Hellenius. I'm going to knock him out again. a rematch with him and Charles Martin. Yeah, Hellenius is a bad matchup for him.
You know what, though? I'm kind of concerned about Konaki because of what happened to, you know, with him and Hellenius because of the timing. Like, the timing around that fight and him kind of losing, given, like, you know, him having his, you know, newborn and all
yeah.
that. So, and his wife being there, it was like, oh, man, that, I bet that had her, like, real scared, yo. So he can't rematch Hellenius, man. That's not gonna work.
Well,
I think
if that really is him, aka Babyface on Twitter. So according to him, for his last couple of fights, has been water weight rather than weight.
What was that? Can't really hear you.
He claims that he's been like a lot of water weight rather than water weight. I don't know why he would do that, being that he's a heavyweight. So it's like, they're not making weight. But according to him, he's been water weight and then rehydrating a lot fight night. I don't get it. So it sounds weird to me, but he claims that
it's just conditioning,
and he has a lot going on, blah, 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 blah. He got his ass knocked out, man, and he hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
He needs to come back and make me look good.
He needs to right his wrong.
Yeah, man. You know what's up with him,
man. Yeah, we'll see, you know, what he does there, man.
But what fight you
think I know that
end up on the pay per view?
What's that?
What fight you think could end up on the pay per view? Or you think we're just gonna end up getting all these whack fights on these undercards?
We gotta have something.
Well, real quick before you answer that, because I was listening to some notes this week in boxing, and Sean Porter. It was brought up to Porter about the possibility of fighting Terrence Crawford. He says, I would love to do it, but it doesn't make sense right now. And he said that because he already know that money's not there for that live gate, and there's not going to be a big demand for a pay-per-view fight right now. So even if you put on, like you guys suggested, two nice heavyweight fights, Fury, Wilder 3 or whatever, and Andy Ruiz and Luis or something like that, or even if you put two nice welterweight fights on it, Errol Spence against Jenny Garcia, and throw Sean Porter in there against a rematch with Ugas or something like that. You know, that would be nice too.
I have a possible fight that could be on as a co-feature for either one of those cards. Okay, it'll be at Super Welterweight. Either you will have a unification bout, Jason Rosario versus Jermell Charlo, or either one of those guys against Jared Hurd.
Ooh. And that's not going to cost a lot.
No, it won't. It won't.
Yeah, that's not going to cost a lot.
And what's Rosario's a fighter that we forgot about. I mean, we know he blew J-Rock out of the water, but we never talk about Rosario. Never do.
Well, I think that's because a lot of people think he's just like cannon fodder for Charlo.
I don't know about that, man. Like,
oh, come on, JR, I don't want to hear your opinion on the Charlos. We already know
how
you feel about the Charlos. We already know. Stop it. The Migos of boxing, as you call them. We know how you feel about this.
Hey, man. No, I mean, I'm saying, like, both Rosario and Jermell Charlo, they're going to be going into those fights. They'll make 154, but by the time they hit the ring, they're going to be at 162 pounds. So my thing is, like, from a size perspective, I think that they're going to be around the same size regardless. So I think it's just going to go towards who would be the, you know, either the quicker fighter or the one with the most power behind their punch. I just think that would be a great fight to have as a co-feature bout for either one of those cards that would be on pay-per-view. So, there's that. Man, I know that they won't do this, but you got that potential matchup between Caleb Plant and David Benavidez, but they're going to have those two guys fight somebody else first, regardless of whether there's going to be Plant.
I think Plant is going to get the Canelo fight.
And we'll see about that one, man. So that'll be something to look at too. What's going to happen with Canelo? If he's go forward with Golovkin, which is not going to happen since Golovkin is so pressed to fight Kamaru Usman. So if he wants to go ahead and fight that good boy, he can go fight that good boy. But you know what? You know what, though?
Boxing God. Please have Zeremeta beat Golovkin.
No, I know, right? But you know what? They should do this. If Gennady Golovkin goes ahead and fights Kamaru Usman, then Canelo should say no to Gennady Golovkin and fight somebody else and just shut him out.
Absolutely.
Force Gennady Golovkin to fight a unification bout with Demetrius Andrade. That's what he should
do. Exactly. That's what he should do. But Eddie Hearn's not interested in building his Matchroom USA fighters. He's just not interested in doing it.
I'm going to put the pressure on him for that one. I'm going to be like, yo, why don't you go ahead and try to make that fight between Golovkin and Andrade? Don't worry about Canelo. Make that fight with Golovkin and Andrade. You're talking about trying to make a fight between Andrade and Charlo. Why don't you just make that in-house fight with Andrade and Golovkin? Straight
up. Exactly.
You know? Because
I would still take Golovkin versus Saunders at this point. Like, I just want to see Golovkin versus somebody good, you know? Or give the ref Yurchenko his damn rematch.
Yeah. Yep. I don't see why you can't do that. You could have the rematch in the same spot. Go ahead and set that up. You have some fans in there. People will still be interested in watching that fight, so I don't see why you can't do it. You know what I mean? So
How about Golovkin, Jamie Munguia?
Nah.
Munguia, actually, Munguia might end up fighting Toriano Johnson said he was interested in fighting him. So
the fight we've all been waiting for.
Maybe I should hit up my boy Too Tall Alante Fox and see if he wants to go ahead and face Golovkin. But I just want Golovkin to actually fight somebody and not hold himself out for a super fight with Canelo or anything like that. Like for once in your whole career, fight for the WBO middleweight championship. You haven't
done that
at any point in your career. At any point, you didn't want to fight Andy Lee. You didn't want to fight Dimitri Pirog. You didn't want to fight Billy Joe Saunders. Like, come on.
That's the facts.
But it's like, man, y'all know me and Gilad and Galassi, man. I just get too. So I ain't even gonna go through that all that much, man. All right, man. That's this portion of this podcast, man. Like I said, I'm going to have Adrian Clark scheduled for next week, and then later on down the line, we may have one of Matt Brown's wishes come true. So we'll see how that's going to work out. We'll be back on next Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Like I say at the end of every show, folks, Point of Boxing is a hit, and I can hit, not to say in the trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Bomb squad, baby.